Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that. But don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. We're back to Wednesdays. Look at that. Welcome to Cinematics Week 68. I am Anderson. Blather about films here and there. Even make them now and again. There's Greg Srozovosti, Broadcast Film Critics Association member, BFCA member. And today...
Tired Manny. Tired Manny. Tired.
There's Greg being a tired man, Manny. He loves to shout from the rooftops. I am Manny. God, you know what, though? The alternative to that is like you're a producer of films or something, and that's your... You know how much I would hate you, Greg, if like we started every show and you're like,
right.
I'm like, there's Greg, Broadcast Film Critics Association member, also a producer. I'm also a producer. Oh, man, we would not hang out if you were that guy.
Is that right? No, I'd never be a producer.
No, but I'm just saying, if you were that guy.
Yeah, if I was that guy.
You're very self-effacing.
I am very self-effacing.
Why don't you get on that mic?
I'm sorry. That's why I'm scared of mics, too. You know what the thing is. You know, a couple weeks ago when I was over in Glendale, sir, yes. I apologize. I didn't say this last week, but I apologize for not staying longer because I'm very, socially inept, but I was able to meet some of your friends.
Yes.
And it was wonderful meeting your friends.
Some people very much liked, we're very excited to meet the old Gregor there.
Yes,
that was nice to see.
That was a really nice time.
So today we talk about The Promise.
The Promise.
The Promise, Greg. You got to say it.
Yes, The Promise. The Promise.
Yes.
By the way, I was looking at Rotten Tomatoes. It received, I think, 31%.
Uh-oh. Flash forward to the film vault, and that's the movie that we have to, and I don't remember you saying
it.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I'm going to remember, and I will divulge this information. 30-something percent? Okay, cool. Got it.
Okay. Yes. And I am going to promise you, listeners, that your feelings towards this Oscar Isaac Christian Bale movie won't be dimmed by my review. Or if you never trust me, it still might be dimmed.
I think a lot of people probably don't trust you, Greg, because you like everything.
Come on.
You like it all.
They like me, but they don't trust me.
They don't trust you.
Yes. And then there's another movie called Jeremiah.
Like if you reviewed Girls, Greg.
Oh, I've never seen... Have you ever seen that?
I'm talking about actual women.
Every
girl would be a 9 or a 10. Okay. You know, so
yeah,
like,
because everyone's beautiful.
So yeah, so if you're setting your friend up on a date and you're like, I got this girl you should go out with, and they say, well, Greg, is she a 9
inside.
Or a 10?
Yeah, 10. They're all 10.
Yeah, they want to trust you. See what I'm saying?
I don't wear Howard Roark hoodies.
What Greg is referring to is a...
Last week I saw you in a Howard. I was scared.
A sweatshirt that I have that's a Howard Roark quote from Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, my favorite book of all time,
yes.
That I got from a listener from Pittsburgh named Greg. His name is Greg.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
He brought it to me on the Film Vault night out, and I love that. The question is not who's going to allow me, but who's going to stop me? Howard Roark. It's a great quote.
I love that book, too. So it's
do
very
you?
Good. Yeah, I do.
Well, why were you last week? You were going, I believe in the little man, and I don't believe in that shirt.
And when I was a freshman at UCLA, that was my favorite book. I believed in...
Here I am, and it continues to be my favorite book. What are you trying to say, Greg?
I'm just saying...
You've evolved, and I've not?
No, I'm just saying you have evolved. You have still... You're still searching for new horizons, and I've slowly
slunk... My favorite book, Gregor.
Slunk into depression.
What's your favorite book?
My favorite book is The Great Gatsby. Because we are all, everyone says Great Gatsby. Because everyone is born ceaselessly into the past. Our lives are, though we live in the present, our minds are often in the past.
What about Catcher? Catcher in the Rye.
I haven't read it since I was in high school. I really enjoyed that as well. Mm-hmm. But, Born Ceaselessly into the Past, that's going to be one of the movies that we're going to talk about this week. Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, a documentary I love.
Since I've screened this Jeremiah Tower documentary, I have asked a number of people, hey, you ever heard of Jeremiah Tower? Every single person says no.
Wow.
And if you asked me last week, you ever heard of Jeremiah Tower? I would have said no. Who's that?
I would have said who's that as well.
Yes.
And listeners, little disclosure here, I texted Anderson. I said, please rejig your schedule this week. See this movie.
Yes.
I was so excited. And
I watched a half of another one, and I was very pleased to get another one in the inbox there, Greg, so I didn't have to talk about the other one. Because I didn't have anything good to say about the other one, Greg, and I don't like to review movies where I just say bad things.
Right. Do we want to start first with the... I'm so sad. I I wanted to say something about, you know, last week about the groupers. How are you doing on the thing? Are you on editing right now? What's going on with
found
that?
Found an editor out of Chicago, and which isn't the dream scenario, but still these days with technology and whatnot, it's going to work out. And about to raise some more funds for some posts, because we did run a little thin during production. And yeah, things are looking good. I'm hoping to have a rough cut by the end of summer. That's kind of my target. And I would like to have a finished film by the end of the year. And I probably shouldn't be divulging this, but honestly, I'm just a little bit tired of talking about groupers. And
Why?
I think part of that is just because
I
don't want the listener to. And I've gotten a lot of emails from you guys saying, hey, please talk about groupers. You're not killing us. But then I get emails saying, all right, enough about groupers as well. So I know there's no winning. Well,
you get emails, people saying enough about groupers.
Yeah.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Really? We've heard enough about groupers. Let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Those are mean emails.
Yeah, they are. They're biting, Greg.
They're biting.
Yeah.
Are they biting? But are they clever? Are they clever when they say that?
Not really.
No. No, they're just mean. Like,
just
move on.
Mean, yeah.
Okay.
But you know what? They're private, and I do appreciate that. God knows what people are saying on Twitter. I don't know because I don't look. But people, if they take the time to actually go to my website, find contact at andersoncowan.com and shoot me an email that's just going to be seen by my eyes only, and they want to be mean, more power to them.
Do you have thick skin, Anderson? When you read that?
No, that's why I don't go on Twitter, Greg. I'm a.
How do you not have thick
fragile
skin?
Fragile little man.
How
Greg.
Long have you been doing TFE for? And then after disaster,
my skin's a lot thicker than it used to be. It used to really hurt me. And now I realize, you know, I meet people in person that have just been awful to me on social media, and they're some of the nicest people I meet when I meet them in person.
Do you ever reference to the social media stuff? Do you ever say, oh, by the way, you were mean to me? Or
it's
no?
Happened. It's happened. And a lot of the time, like when you actually, I've learned that when these people are really mean to you on social media and then you contact them directly, they always crumble immediately and, oh, I was just messing around. Hey, good to meet you. So it's weird. It's yeah. A strange thing, but I just choose not to look at it. I don't look at reviews. I don't look at, I don't know, when Groupers comes out, though, I'm probably going to find myself looking at reviews, and it's not going to be fun. Yes. I think this is not a critic-proof movie, Greg.
Yes.
Critics are going to have some issues with this one.
Uh-huh. I'm going to give it 5 stars, though.
That means nothing, Greg. Every woman is a 9 or a 10.
Yeah, shouldn't every woman be a 9 or 10? I'm just saying, maybe not, okay? So, look, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, do you want to start off with the promise first?
Let's do the promise.
The promise. Okay, so here's the thing about the Armenian genocide, right? It's an epic, okay? It's an epic film. Are you excited at all about The Promise? It's directed by Terry George, the filmmaker behind, I believe, Hotel Rwanda. It stars
writer.
Writer. Oh,
primarily
writer.
A writer, yeah.
Who directed Hotel Rwanda? Very good on that. Very good on that. Anyways.
He did.
Oh, he did. Mm-hmm. Writer and director.
Writer and director,
and
yes.
And director, okay.
Sorry. He also wrote My Left Foot.
Oh, I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I did know that.
No, In the Name of the Father.
Oh.
I'm a terrible person.
And he directed that as well. He directed...
Mm-hmm. No, Jim Sheridan.
You know what? I get those guys confused. Mm-hmm. Because they're so... Their relationship, they're like... Mutt and Jeff. Jim Sheridan... Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry George.
Yes.
Yes. Anyways, The Promise. It's 134 minutes, Anderson.
That's long.
134 minutes.
It's a long film.
I had to go out there. Remember we saw, what's that movie last year with, you know, the movie set in New Orleans with Casey Affleck, all the cops with the Triple Nine.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Anderson and I, listeners, we saw last year Triple Nine out in Wilshire, out in Brentwood. It's a nice screening room. Remember that screening room? It's a really beautiful screening room.
I remember seeing the movie. I don't remember where we saw it.
Open Sorry. Road screening room. Very.
Pretty sure that I saw that on my couch.
Anyways, it was at the end of the day.
Really?
I was tired.
We saw Triple Nine together? Are you sure?
Yeah, we did. You're getting in your...
Particular. You know what I remember
you know
about
why?
Triple
because
Nine?
Because you're a filmmaker. You, because...
you know what I remember more about Triple Nine than anything else was one of the cop calls. They showed up, and it was kind of just like a throwaway little quick scene, but they showed up, first respondents showed up to a very, very large African-American woman standing on top of a car and nothing but her panties.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Yeah.
She was a 9. I just wanted to say because she's beautiful on the inside and outside. Yes, I remember. Thanks for that indelible image.
Sorry,
beautiful
buddy.
Woman. If she was here, I'd marry her. So that's the kind of special guy I am. I love all films and women. So, anyways.
Oh my God! Look at this.
What?
Terry George wrote The Boxer, right?
Oh, and he directed it too.
No, Jim Sheridan directed it. they're the same person.
They're really the same. By the way,
have you interviewed both of them?
I never have. Can we just call him Jim Sheridan? Anyways, Terry George, he wrote
Terry Sheridan.
Yes,
Jim George.
Yes, yes. Terry George, Jim Sheridan writes and directs The Promise, 134 minutes. It's been getting bad reviews because a lot of people are saying it's plodding, it's boring, it's old-fashioned. Mm. This movie...
has an old-fashioned poster, I can tell you that.
Has an old-fashioned poster. It is old-fashioned storytelling. This is a movie that if it was released maybe in the 1950s or the late 1940s, maybe Gary Cooper or John Wayne would star in it. I don't mean that in a bad way. This is just an old-fashioned story. And it's told absolutely... it's a well-done story. I think one of the reasons why people are really not high on The Promise is the fact that it's not really... it's not a cool thing to like. It's not a hipster type of film. It's not directed by David Fincher. It doesn't have all these really cool cuts. Mm-hmm. It's just a really well-done film.
I'm hearing from you is boring.
No.
Dullsville.
134 minutes? Mm. I was not bored one single second. Last week we did that high school movie, which I gave 3 stars to, My High School Sinking Into Sea, which was 77
my
minutes.
My entire high school sinking into the sea.
Right. I was more bored with that in 70. Mm-hmm. That 77 minutes felt longer to me than this 134 minutes. And I'll tell you why. The movie centers on this guy named Michael. He is a medical student who is promised to marry, engaged to marry this woman. The reason why he's marrying this woman is because he's promised a large dowry, 400 gold coins or something. Mm-hmm. And he's going to use a big part of that dowry, to become a medical student for 2 years. So he goes into the city, Turkey, I believe, somewhere in Turkey, to study medicine. This guy named Michael, played by Oscar Isaac, and while he's there, he meets this woman named Anna.
What year is this taking place? Like, is it a period piece?
Period piece, like 1918-ish.
18-ish? Okay, since on the IMDb blurb here, it says the last days of the Ottoman Empire. Like, I'm supposed to know. Like, I'm a historian.
Yeah.
Please tell me.
I am not a historian.
Please tell me what year it's the last.
I think it's, hold on, let me see. Armenian Genocide. I can't believe I'm Googling this. Not a very good thing to Google, but when it happened. Yeah, the period of the Armenian Genocide, which 1.5 million people died, 1915 through 1917. So I'm thinking this movie was set in 1917, to be specific.
Okay.
The Armenian Genocide. Anyways, so this medical student, played by Oscar Isaac, he meets this woman named Anna. She's played by Charlotte LeBon. L-E-B-O-N, Charlotte LeBon. She is actually also Armenian. The first time he sees her from across a crowded room, he is immediately smitten by her looks and her charm. The only problem is Anna is, her boyfriend is this guy named Chris. This Chris is played by Christian Bale. Chris is an American photojournalist who is dedicated to finding the story behind this impending conflict that Turkey wants to get into with the Armenians. He believes something's amiss with the Germans, something's going on, et cetera, et cetera. So it's another love triangle. We talked about a love triangle last week. This week, it's a different love triangle. It's with the medical student, Oscar Isaac, the photojournalist, Christian Bale, and this beautiful woman, Anna. Mm-hmm. So that's the entire story. It's about how they navigate their way through this war, through the tragedy of this genocide, how of the Armenian people who are massacred in their towns and their villages. Mm-hmm. It's a war film. It's a romantic war drama.
Sounds awful.
It sounds... why does it sound awful?
I don't want my war and my romance mixing, Greg.
Oh, really? What?
It's like sardines and peanut butter.
Casablanca? Well, Casablanca is not a war movie, right? It's not really a war movie.
It's not a movie enjoyed by me.
I remember you not liking Casablanca again.
Not enjoyed
by the way,
me.
That's why we're ending Cinematics, because we're not going to end it.
Wow, that's how you let people know.
I was joking. That was a joke. Mm-hmm. We're not Casablanca. We always have
Casablanca.
We'll always have Paris, Anderson.
What does that mean? Oh, is that a quote from Casablanca?
I was thinking it might be a quote. I was just kidding.
Get this. I'm not a giant fan of Paris either. Don't think it's a great city.
Have you ever been to Paris?
Oh, yeah.
No way.
Overrated.
Why are you serious? You've been to
Paris? Alienating people left and right.
Paris, everyone
thinks they're supposed to love Paris. I like Prague more. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, Prague is a much more beautiful place.
I just found it more interesting. I wanted to spend more time there.
Oh, really? Yeah. How long did you spend in Paris?
I don't know, 3 days.
Oh, did you go down the Seine?
The Seine River? Oh, yeah, that was the best part. I went down the river, and they're like, Napoleon, put that up, and that was kind of cool. All that stuff.
Gorgeous.
And you need a good 4 or 5 weeks probably to be there.
You didn't like the actually, people. You didn't like. You,
if I had to spend 4 weeks anywhere in Europe, Paris would probably be the place because there's so much to see. But it was kind of dirty and like it kind of had like a weird vibe to it. I think part of it has to do with I've seen so many Parisian films that are very, very dark, like Irreversible. And I spent my first 2 hours in Paris looking for the rape tunnel from Irreversible.
Only to find out.
I know, I'm such an ass. I'm there in Paris, like, for the first time ever, and there's all these great things to see, and I'm looking for some tunnel that some horrific movie was shot.
Did you ask bystanders? Yes. I love Gaspar Noé.
Turns out that they filled that tunnel, and it no longer exists. But it was a tunnel that took you underneath the street, up to the other side of the street, and they have since closed that tunnel. I don't think it has anything, it's not related to the film, the reason why they closed it. Who knows, though? Who knows? Yes. But there was a creepy vibe to Paris. Like, it wasn't like, oh, love is in the air, birds chirping. I felt kind of like, hey, I was a little scared, Greg, like you.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, like me. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's, maybe I won't go to Paris again. But, you know.
You've been there?
Yeah, I've been there.
You loved it.
A week with my parents and my sister.
You went down the river.
I went down the Seine. Loved it. I loved
one of the boats. Yeah, you got a kiss.
You know, I'm a huge fan of Henry Miller. He's a writer, American expatriate.
Every time you go under a bridge, you're supposed to kiss your loved one.
Oh, I didn't know.
A lot of kissing.
I loved the Parisians there. The people were nice to me. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Maybe they felt sorry for me, but I really enjoyed it there. Anyways, speaking of enjoying, The Promise, I thought it was going to be a big, like you say, slog. It was not a slog.
Likeable characters. Christian Bale.
Michael, the Oscar Isaac character, we see him going from a medical student through, obviously, this is not a spoiler because the war happening, he becomes a prisoner, all this stuff. There's a lot of, you see the war, how the war ravages these three people. Everything works to me. I really enjoyed this movie. The only thing, my only strike, it has one strike.
It was boring.
No. Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Christian Bale as a photojournalist, it's an interesting story because let's just, you know, it's predictable. In a love triangle, you're thinking Michael and Anna, they're both Armenians, they're gonna bond, they're gonna like each other. So this guy Chris, that reporter, that journalist, is gonna end up being an a-hole or a jerk.
Right.
The good thing about it is this Chris guy, played by Bale, is actually a well-rounded figure. He's a compassionate figure. So you usually see in a love triangle, usually someone's a bad seed.
Right.
There's really no bad seed in this love triangle. So I thought it was a really well-developed story. Mm-hmm. I did not believe Christian Bale as a photojournalist. Mm-hmm. When there's a couple moments where he's yelling a couple Germans, like a couple people, and when he goes off, I'm not thinking this is a photojournalist in 1917, Ottoman Empire, this kind of tragedy thing. I'm thinking that's Batman yelling at someone. He did not fit the role. He does a commendable job, and I'm glad that he takes a secondary role. He's not the lead in it, but I just felt I wish they had someone else other than Christian. He sticks out like a sore thumb. This is like in Interstellar, in the middle of the movie, when you see Matt Damon just pop out of freaking nowhere in the planet. Mm-hmm. It just takes you out of the movie. There are moments in this movie where just seeing Christian Bale took me out of the film. Overall, though, I enjoyed the story. The biggest plus for me was Charlotte Le Bon. I've never seen her in anything, and she's absolutely, absolutely luminous as Anna, a 9 or a 10 for me. Not just looks-wise, but talent-wise, she's very good. I give this movie The Promise, opens wide, April 21st, mm-hmm. 4 stars. 4 stars.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Hey, James Woods in Salvador.
I give him 5 stars.
What?
I've never seen Salvador.
He was a photojournalist, Greg.
See, look, a younger James Woods in this role.
Yeah.
Would have knocked great choice.
Ewan McGregor in Last King of Scotland. Journalist, right?
Ewan McGregor would have worked.
Ewan.
Yeah, yeah.
Ewan.
Any of those transponding guys, of those T2 guys transponding would have worked.
Yeah, anyone. I'm hearing anyone. How about...
Christian Bale does not work. I mean, he's fine. He's fine in the movie.
Dabney Coleman, would he have worked?
Dabney Coleman, old school, very 1980s.
Would he have worked?
Yeah, he would have worked. He would have worked. Buffalo Bill. I remember that show. Yeah, Buffalo Bill.
All right, let's move on. I promise you this, Greg. I have no interest in seeing The Promise.
It's Open Road Films. Are you telling Open Road Films you're not interested in seeing?
I don't think they're listening, but if they were, I'd say thank you. What else you got?
Terry George or Jim Sheridan, whoever he's called. Yeah, okay. So you're never going to watch
Jim George.
TFE. Maybe I'll make the call to Brian for you to see this.
Who's Brian? Let's move on.
Okay, move on.
Let's talk a little Jeremiah Tower. Let's let the listeners know about a man named Jeremiah Tower. I think most of our listeners are too young and weren't alive in San Francisco or socialites in San Francisco in the 80s to have ever been to one of his restaurants, Stars.
Right.
Which turned into
a chain. Francisco, right?
Yes.
Stars.
The original one was Stars in San Francisco, and then he ended up making a whole bunch of them. He is an American chef. He was considered to be perhaps the best American chef of his era.
And maybe he bridged the gap from chef to celebrity.
To celebrity. Before, they talk about this as well. Like, you know, there's always some kind of crossover generational talent. I shouldn't say always, but a lot of fields you hear about this. Like, even going back to, like, professional sports early, you know, turn of the century, baseball players, they had, like, or football players, they had, like, day jobs as well, you know.
Right.
But then they become, somebody comes along that's so enigmatic that they become stars. And Jeremiah Tower was that guy for chefs. I mean, we didn't have Gordon Ramsay's. We didn't have, what's his name? He's in this movie.
Anthony Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain.
Who produced the movie.
Wolfgang Puck. We didn't have...
Who's in this movie as well.
They actually mentioned somebody says that, you know, if you were a chef, like, your parents were ashamed of you back then. And this guy, Jeremiah Tower, took it to such lengths, such heights, that became something that other people aspired to be.
Right. The documentary also opens with the opening chapter. It has him when he first... Well, not the opening chapter. It also covers his years in Chez Panisse.
In Chez Panisse. Well, okay, so the film had me a bit nervous to begin with because it was like open prose. It felt like talking about Terrence Malick again, kind of just, what is that, stream of consciousness.
Nonlinear narrative.
And, you know, he's in the Inca. He's down in Mexico.
He's in Mexico, Nerida, Mexico, I think.
Modern day, like he's of age. He's like today, whatever he is.
Early
like
70s.
Early 70s. Yeah. And we're hearing some kind of like... poetry that is going through his head about the ocean and about old flesh turning new. I was worried. I was concerned that was going to be the whole movie. And then it turns into what it is for the rest of the movie, which is an in-depth look at this man's life, how he began, how he lived his years as an only child with a silver spoon in his mouth, lots and lots of exposure to culture, and on these grand trips that he took with his parents.
Living in a luxury liner or a hotel.
Right, but always, he would be a great character in a book or a series of books about this young boy living this life of luxury, but so lonely and without purpose.
He's a Wes Anderson character.
He is a very Wes Anderson character. And also, they kind of gloss over how he was sexually abused at a very young age.
Yeah.
Barely even talk about that, but that was when he realized, oh, my parents don't care. He was like 6 years old in Australia on a beach. An Aborigine who was showing him how to cook a barracuda. And then next thing you know, the Aborigine's taking him this is very early in the film, taking him into the jungle to see his lizard.
Yeah.
And horrible things are happening. Then he goes back to see his parents who are just drinking in the hotel lobby. They're like, oh, where were you? You had a good time out there on the beach in the middle of the night? Oh, you met a man? That's fantastic. And it was at that moment that he realized he had to start, you know, fending for himself and learning to take care of himself because his parents, he's 6 years old and he's learning this.
Yeah, it's such a tragic moment. And what's also interesting about that moment, and he also described the way the barracuda was cooked.
Right.
So it's his most tragic moment in his life, but he still has the senses, the culinary
senses.
Pivotal
moment in his life, for sure.
Yeah.
And he's exposed to all of these exotic cultures and their food, and it sticks with him. And he was supposed to be, it goes on about how he's supposed to be a Harvard man, and he was thinking about being an architect, but he just kept coming back to cooking because that's what really got him going. And a very, very smart man, probably a genius. Anything that he had passion about, he probably would have excelled in, and it happened to be cooking. So the story is interesting. A lot of... source footage from his childhood and 8mm movies, which is always great. And we see all sorts of it's not talking head, like you said, right?
Yeah.
And then...
Well, it has
talking head moments for sure.
But it's not even part of the... It's one of the ingredients in the burrito.
What makes this movie so good, though, is because about halfway through it, that's when they get to his real... So he's... brought on as a chef in this bohemian restaurant in San Francisco called
Chez Panisse.
Chez Panisse.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where he really cut his teeth and took charge.
It's so amazing because it starts off as this really cool vibe, San Francisco, artsy bohemia.
Like cult-ish type, Charlie Manson type run restaurant, right?
I was going to say a nice hippie community.
Right.
With one of these, you know, this was before farm-to-table. This would have been a farm-to-table type of restaurant.
Right. It was absolutely that. These kind of restaurants are all over the place now, but this thing. And then he comes in with all of his culture and all of his ideas and his chefliness, and he turns it into something completely different. And next thing you know, there's people taking Lear jets to eat at this restaurant because of the reputation.
Because he's an expert in French cuisine. I don't even know who Escoffier is. I know Escoffier is a big, large culinary giant, especially with French cuisine. Mm-hmm. But he changes Chez Panisse to a real hardcore French cuisine place.
Right.
And then, you know, this is all part of the history thing, but the fact that he literally invents a whole appreciation of American cuisine.
Right.
Such an important
part. Before, it was really interesting. He was talking about how like you'd be embarrassed to be serving Dungeness crab. You wish that you had like the blue crab, whatever the crabs were from France, or like the oysters from France. But he's like, you know what? Let's embrace like our local food and farms and resources. And that's that was the beginning of that, which is now huge. I mean, that's what you look for. You look for local.
It's standard now.
You go into your local supermarket and like, you know, on the grapes, it'll be like, I'm local.
Yeah.
It's like, so he changed the culture there, and then he creates this restaurant called Stars, which we already alluded to, which is like the douchey mid-80s like place to be seen and to enjoy yourself.
Right.
It's the kind of place that American Psycho, what's his name? Patrick Bateman would, he would absolutely have to go to Stars, and he would have to have the best table in Stars. It was one of those restaurants that is mentioned numerous times in American Psycho. And that's where he really became like the celebrity chef, right?
Yeah.
And
then
just like that, he disappears. And that's kind of what the documentary turns into. This is towards the end of the second act. And what makes it a really, really good documentary that I can say you need to see this, not only because of Jeremiah Tower and getting educated on this man who was a giant and now is like not really, he's far from a household name, which I've discovered.
Right.
But the third act becomes this whole twist in the story that becomes a story unto itself. The entire documentary could have been just about that third act.
Right.
Which is a new challenge. We're not going to, you know, lay it all out on the table, you guys discover some of this. You should see this movie at some point, but it catches up with real time almost and shows this new challenge that he's coming into, and you find yourself rooting for him almost.
Right.
Like a champion boxer coming out of retirement type thing. It's great. It's really great.
I have a little nitpick with this movie, and it's not even a nitpick which would make me give it less stars or anything like that. It's just it builds up to the mystery. It answers the mystery. It has actually several mysteries in this. Jeremiah Tower as a man.
He's an enigma.
He's an enigma. Okay, so there are mysteries upon mysteries with his documentary, like Anderson was saying. It makes it so interesting. My only quibble is there's one mystery that isn't really fully developed, but that does not detract. I would have liked to have known a little bit more about Jeremiah's third chapter, a little bit more. I know what you're talking about. There's it explains one of his chapters, the third chapter, but there's another.
I'm lost. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, okay. I wish we got to know a little bit more about his life. Some of the missing years.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, some of the missing years.
Okay, he after Stars, and somebody actually says it in the documentary that they went back to check it out, and it was gone, and it was the equivalent of like going to the Louvre in Paris, and it's just gone.
Right.
And it was so strange to them that this giant restaurant that was like the heart of the city, or at least that part of the city at the time, just disappeared. And it's all still standing. It looks like it's all still there. It's just empty. The bar is empty. This is the restaurant that made the bar actually the cool part.
Yes.
Like, before that, the bar was just some place where, you know, you had to go sit and wait for your table. And Stars made it like that was the place
locus,
to be.
The center. The center.
But yes, what Greg's alluding to is after Stars went up in smoke, Jeremiah kind of fell out of the public eye. And that's not really... We don't really know where he went, I guess.
But, yeah, I mean, it alludes to it in certain moments. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, like Anderson was saying. It's just a minor complaint. And you know what? All that mystery can be solved because he's written books. You can look up Jeremiah Tower on Wikipedia. I did after watching the movie. I learned a little bit more about him. That being said, listeners, if you don't know Jeremiah Tower or his life, I suggest you even if you're not a fan of the culinary arts or if you're not a foodie, Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent, to me is a must-see film. It's a 4.5-star documentary for me. It's just, Jeremiah Tower is so interesting.
Especially nowadays with all these cooking shows and all these celebrity chefs. I mean, it seems like this is kind of the guy that started it all.
Yeah. And can we also say, I don't know if you agree, the director, Lydia Tenaglia, she could have made, like Anderson said, she could have made this a talking head documentary because the talking heads are interesting people.
Yeah, you got Wolfgang Puck,
Mario Batali.
Yeah,
you could have just put a
No Ramsey though. I think he and Bourdain hate each other, so that's probably
okay.
Why.
Well, you could have made it a talking head documentary because these guys are interesting.
Yeah,
but she doesn't go the lazy route. She actually makes this her own little narrative, and she spins
it. You can almost smell this film at times. With some of the imagery. Like, it was like stinky almost, right?
Yeah, I was blown away by this film. So, yeah.
A solid 4 stars for me.
Very cool.
I really, really enjoyed Jeremiah Tower. It's not for everybody if you don't care about cuisine or cooking or...
I think the character outweighs the culinary
If you don't
stuff.
Like pricks, he's kind of a prick. I mean,
really?
There's a lot of people... Like, the wife doesn't care about food, but she really enjoyed the documentary with me.
Oh, cool. See there.
But I could see a lot of people just kind of being rubbed the wrong way by him. And the wife brought up some good points as well when it ended, like it's kind of supposed to be like this swans or this violin playing, like, oh, so sad, such a sad, tragic character. And my wife's like, I'm supposed to feel bad for this guy that was like handed everything and has all these like experiences, and he was able to travel the world, and you know, everything was just handed to him. Harvard man, there's plenty of people to feel bad for. My wife's a social worker, she houses homeless people, she's not gonna feel bad for a guy named Jeremiah Tower, you know what I mean?
Understandable on that,
right?
One, yeah,
but it's a very good, I could see maybe younger people not really, you know, I don't know, 15-year-old Anderson would have loved this one. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
The poster is a fork with 3 of the prongs down, making it look like the fork is flipping you off, to give you an idea.
I really flipped. And you know, he is a little bit of an unsympathetic
somewhat
character.
Yeah.
A little bit. He just,
I would never want to work with this guy.
But he's very interesting. He's a very interesting person. And I think he's relatable in the sense that there are parts, I mean, no matter how friendly you are, there are parts of yourself that you just, that, you know, you want to keep private. Jeremiah Tower is the kind of guy who keeps the darkest parts of his life private.
And they allude to that numerous times. And friends of his and people that are close to him who even try to go to those dark parts and uncover them, they are immediately cut out of his life. He just says, all right, I don't want to deal with that person anymore because they're trying to get to the dark parts, which I can appreciate that.
Yeah,
I've lost a few friends that way. I've tried to talk to them about some of their stuff, and next thing you know, I don't hear from them ever again.
Do you regret?
No, not at all.
No. Because you're trying to be a friend.
Yeah, trying to be a friend, and also a lot. Yeah, I don't want to get into it, but it happened with 2 different people that I can think of off the top of my head. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, well, now I'm sad.
Jeremiah Tower.
Guess it does bother me. Yeah.
Yeah, right? The Last Magnificent.
The Last Magnificent, yes. Jeremiah Tower. It's a very good film.
Yes.
Very good documentary. In a world filled with good documentaries, this one's really good.
Yes. So I think last week we were talking about cinematics. Because I was going to say there's other movies coming out. Are there other movies coming out?
Yes, Greg. I'm sure there's other films coming out.
Because I'm thinking about... thinking about a lot of things. I'm thinking about Jeremiah Tower. I'm thinking about Jim Sheridan and Terry George.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about our show.
Right.
Thinking about life in general.
So Greg and I are talking about a couple different things that might have to happen for at least the interim, which is...
Before you say interim, at post interim, just very quickly, Unforgettable is coming out this Friday.
Mm.
It's probably a Katherine Heigl movie.
How many Unforgettable movies?
Rosario Dawson.
Like 3 or 4 movies called Unforgettable, right?
There's a Disney movie called Born in China, which I haven't seen. And there's a Brie Larson film called Free Fire. There's another movie we got the link to called Somewhere Beautiful, which, look, we did get the, you know, we got the links to, but we can't review it because, look, I just realized the embargo is on Friday.
Mm.
So those are the movies that are coming out on Friday. Sorry, Anderson.
Somewhere Beautiful. Also, if you're an Adam McGoyan fan, this is based off of somehow connected to one of his films.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Unforgettable. There is a movie in 1996 with Ray Liotta called Unforgettable. Linda Fiorentini Fiorentino is also in this.
Yes. John Dahl directed it.
John Dahl, the best. Yeah. Yeah. Unforgettable, though, was where he started to take a turn for the worse. But I loved Red Rock West.
That's so good.
The Last Seduction. Oh, so good. Also with Fiorentino.
Fiorentino. Yeah.
Unforgettable, 96, right? Ray Liotta, Fiorentino. 2011, Unforgettable, with Poppy Montgomery and Dylan Walsh.
That was a TV series, I believe?
Nope, that's different.
Oh.
Unforgettable, maybe, perhaps.
Oh.
Maybe
but
you're right.
But there's a lot of Unforgettable.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right, Craig.
No, you're right because
I hate when I say no and then it turns out, yes, you were correct. Yes, it is a television series, Unforgettable. Wait, hold on. God, no.
Hold on. Well, I think Born in China, I don't even know. Born in China is a Disney film.
2016, Greg. Lee Byung-soo and Ju Da-ju, J-O-O, Da-young, Unforgettable, 2016.
Oh, Korean film, probably. I don't know.
I think so with those names.
Yeah.
Right. 2017, Joan Collins, Franco Nero. Unforgettable.
Wow.
2017, Rosario Dawson.
That's it.
And Katherine Heigl. Too many Unforgettables out there. Did they just forget that there's other Unforgettables?
So that's Rosario Dawson movie with Katherine Heigl. Unforgettable.
Jeez. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, I skipped that. I missed that movie.
All right.
Okay.
Sorry cool.
For interrupting you.
No, it's all right. Did I interrupt you nonstop? That's why you're quitting the show. I get it.
No. Oh, see, that's... No, because you don't like Casablanca.
Here's what's going to happen, I think. Okay. We even say it now here?
Yeah, sure.
Looks like just because of children and time restraints and whatnot, I think what we're probably going to put our best foot forward and to continue this show and helping people out and just checking in with people is we are going to commit to the first of every month. We're going to talk about movies that are coming out later that month that we're excited about. Maybe some sleepers that we are aware of that we're looking forward to.
I'm throwing this out there. Maybe we might throw in like a couple of movie picks or something like that, streaming picks on, you know, just
I don't
about.
Think we're gonna have to fill out where that's gonna be a good episode where we're talking about 4 weeks worth of movies that are coming out, you
oh
know
that's
I mean?
A lot. Yeah,
and then the following month the first as well, on the first we will talk about some of those movies that we caught, that we got to see, some of the movies that we maybe didn't even highlight that we saw that were great,
okay,
as well as what's coming out that fall. So a little bit of a post than a preview, and I think that you may be doing some more audio stuff on your own underneath the cinematic banner, right?
Yes. Yes.
I might be, you know, throwing in some little like 5-10 minute things, just me by myself talking about movies that I'll throw into the feed.
Which I hear, you know, people have emailed me saying, Greg, can you be less on the mic? Mm-hmm. More.
No,
and we want more Anderson.
That's sarcasm. They're
we
telling
you. We want more Anderson
you drift
and less, Greg.
On the mic.
Less Greg and more Anderson.
No, Gregor. No.
They're saying so even if it's 5 minutes.
We
of
might
Anderson.
Even bring in a third person. There's talk. Well, there's a lot of scuttlebutt going
there's
on.
A lot
of, Greg and I have been talking.
I want listeners to know that Anderson's one of my very good friends. I actually have only several friends actually in my life.
I only have several friends. What kind of a statement
I really
is that?
Do. But Anderson's one of them.
I only have several. That's a weird statement.
Just
Greg.
two or three.
Okay.
But
a handful.
We Anderson and I, we like each other. There's nothing wrong. There's no
yeah, I
friction.
Love doing this and it's kind of a bummer, but you know, maybe we will try and do one. Maybe we'll do a test run. You come over here when I'm with Atticus and we'll see what happens. Maybe we try that in a couple weeks.
Can I say that there are a lot of balls in the air. The most important thing is this is how I feel about it. Is most important is family. And, you know, Anderson is time schedule. I have time schedule too. Mm-hmm. You know, so but we both love movies, and we're gonna figure something out.
Right, the film vault's not enough. I gotta do something else. Your junkets are not enough. You need this, Greg.
Yes, I definitely need this. So we will figure something out for you guys. I always go back to the time when Anderson and I went to that really cool bar, which I haven't been to lately at all.
Pink Taco.
No, not Pink Taco. No, we went to Pink Taco, and then
that's
we went
where
to another,
the show was created.
Created, yes, Pink Taco. But then we went to another bar another night. You're right about Pink Taco. That's Pink Taco is closed down, folks. Now
is it?
No, it doesn't exist anymore.
Century City?
Yeah, it
really?
Exist. They don't have Pink Taco
they
anymore.
They finally decided I think, name is too inappropriate.
Yeah, but you know we went.
Well, you know what I love about them all is Pink Taco was at one end and BJ's was at the other. And it was like a nice mall.
I don't get the reference, no. Anderson. I don't get the
all
reference.
Right. I
but
get it.
We went to another bar, and I remember, I always remember what you said. You wanted to do a show for movie lovers, and that's value added. And I think the most important, I've actually learned it's all about being value added. And you know what? The last year and a half, I'm getting really good recommendations from the people who listen to the
show.
It's
a great little community that we've you know, we got here. So also we should make it. I know we've been saying it, but for reals now, I think we're going to make sure it's available here very, very soon. Yes. Just to, you know, keep Cinematics out there in the public eye and alive. You know, small but strong, Gregor.
Small but strong. Or you can go with me, small but small. That's good too. Okay. That was a bad joke. That's another reason why we're not... Okay, sorry.
So I don't know when the next episode will be. At the very latest, I think, May 1st, which is just in like 10 days, and we might try and do one in between that before.
Yes.
All right?
We will still be here.
Hey, look, one man who's busier than us. Luther, why are you so late?
I've been busy.
Till next week, I hope.